Support for the Closing Market Report podcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments at adm.com/farmerview.
From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 26th day of July 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana. And Jim Angel will be here, Illinois State climatologist, to look at the weather forecast for the weekend and the week ahead. He'll look back, too, at what happened during the month of July across the state of Illinois. Along the way today, we'll hear from Lisa Brault, another one of her In My Backyard segments, and we'll check in with the United Soybean Board, which has an idea to spur some ideas in the farmers' minds about the potential implications of resistant weeds in their fields. And it all happened right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago for a Friday afternoon, futures finished the day mostly lower, at least in the grains. Oilseeds were a bit higher for the day. September corn futures at 492 were down 4. December at 476 were down 2.75. And the March corn at $4.88.75, 2.5 lower. The May futures there at 496.5, down 2.75. And July contracted 503, 2.5 cents lower. December of next year, $5.65, down 3.75 cents. The soft red winter wheat at $6.91.5, down 3/4. December at 701.25, down 0.75 cents. August soybean futures, 1349.75, finished 5.5 cents lower, but there was a bounce in the rest of the pit. September at 1275.25, up 8.5 cents. November at 1228.5, up 4.5. In January, 1233.75, up 4.75. March soybeans, 1235.75, 5.75 higher, and the July at 1238.5, up 8. Next year's November, $12.35, up 6.25. August bean meal at $430.30, down $17.50. August bean oil at $43.58, down 23 cents. Live cattle futures finished the nearby August at $121.80, up 15 cents. October at $125.85, 35 higher. August feeders for 100 pounds, $152.60. That's 25 cents higher on the end of the day. And the September compared to yesterday, up 22.5 cents at $156 even. August lean hogs, 97.77.5, down 80. October down $1.17.5 at $84.80. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the day. September contracted $104.78 a barrel, down 71 cents. The RBOB or wholesale price of gasoline at $3.03, 3.6 cents higher. And ethanol futures at $2.22, 8 cents, up 3 cents. The spread between those two is now 82.5 cents wide. That's 3 3/10 cents wider than it was yesterday, and one of the widest spreads that we've seen since we started tracking just about a year ago. Natural gas trading at $3.55, 8 cents. That's 8 6/10 cents lower, and the diesel fuel at $3.50, 2 cents lower on the day. Gold futures at $1,321.50 an ounce, finished the day $7.30 lower, and the dollar at 81.65 is currently down just about 0.31. Here's what the weather forecast looks like from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. We should see mostly sunny skies with a chance of rain showers and thunderstorms, a high of 78 degrees on a southwest wind at about 10 miles an hour. I should say cloudy skies, but not sunny. Tonight, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Those will come mainly before 1 in the evening, a.m. that is, mostly cloudy at a low of 58. And then tomorrow, partly sunny skies and a 70-degree mark. West-northwest winds at 9 to 11 miles an hour. Mostly clear on Saturday night and a low of 50. Sunday, sunny and 74. Partly cloudy on Sunday evening and 55. Sunny skies for Monday and 77 degrees. A chance of rain showers on Monday night, mostly cloudy otherwise, and 63. Showers may continue into Tuesday. Mostly cloudy and 75 for the high. And then Tuesday evening, showers and thunderstorms and a low of 63. Partly cloudy skies, rather partly sunny skies on Wednesday, and a high near 80 degrees. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the closing market report. It is the 26th day of July, 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us from Atchison, Kansas, is Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Hi, Mike. How are you this afternoon?
Good, Todd. How are you doing?
I'm doing really, really well. What kind of skies do you have out there in the great big West?
Weather's breaking. We had about 0.4 inches of rain, it looked like, overnight, and now we're starting to see a secondary cool front come through, so we're getting sunny, and we're getting windy again, so the moisture is probably not going to last too long unless we get some follow-up with the wind starting to pick up.
0.4, I suppose, is better than nothing when you're kind of dry, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But, you know, the Kansas City News was joking at noontime. They wondered what that was that was falling out of the sky. So it goes down pretty far. And, you know, you get it south of Kansas City, it sounds like it gets better. But you also get out of corn and bean country at that point, too.
And so what'd you make of the trade for the day?
Well, I kept hitting the reset button this week, Todd, and it didn't do a darn bit of good, so I'm going to send my Staples reset button back, but I guess the big thing I noticed was...
Was that for your new office?
yeah, that's right. No, the big thing for the lead month corn I noticed was that we came from July 11th in lead month corn when July was still lead month futures of a high of 730. 15 days later now, we've broken to 490. That $2.40 price break in that time period, I couldn't find a similar one until I went back to the financial crisis when we dropped from 761 at the end of June to 494 in the beginning of August. And so when I see something like that, I just can't think that it's all about the cash markets, all about the basis, all about farmer selling. I think it has a lot to do with funds. And I think one of the newer stories that's starting to develop that we're going to have to dig deeper into next week in the analytical world is the idea that USDA is looking at using sugar for ethanol and opening up a 2008 law to sell sugar at a loss to ethanol producers. And they also are thinking in the RIN world, the ethanol RIN world, and some of the speculators in the markets are wondering, because of the big break in prices and RINs, that the mandate that is scheduled to go from 10 to 15% is not going to be raised. In other words, some news is going to be coming out, and the speculation is that it's not going to be increased as far as the mandate. So I think when you get big breaks like this, there's got to be something bigger underneath the break that has helped it push it, and that the basis in the front-end lead month corn and beans getting hit so hard had something underneath it more than just farmer selling or the weather turning better.
The sugar growers have been really active in Washington, D.C. over the last, I think, about a year. But one of maybe only a handful of commodities that has done really, really poorly in the last 5 years as opposed to really well, I guess.
Yeah, and interesting, Reuters reported today, and this is what was very interesting and probably needs to be looked at more. They're reporting that about $405 million in sugar loans issued by USDA to guarantee the minimum price to the growers will start to mature here in the coming weeks. And if those market prices are below that loan price, then processors will go ahead and forfeit the sugar to the USDA and keep the loan money. And I'm not trying to connect the dot here, but I think that, again, when you see a break in corn at the size of what we had during the financial crisis, I just don't think it can all be about weather, and it can't all just be about farmer-related selling. So it leads me to think that if the cash market is still got a strong demand, and demand is not shifted or manipulated or the curve is not changed by a government policy shift, then what we face just now is a short-term issue.
Well, the expectations in the futures market is that they look to see, right, what things might happen in the future, and the RFS certainly is one of those things that they've been discussing a lot in the last week, and there's in the news at least a lot of consideration that it will be changed in the coming year for 2014, and I'm wondering how much that has to do with soybeans and soybean oil as opposed to other things, but maybe both.
Well, I think you bring up a good point. I think the distinction between meal and corn right now is that the meal processor has nothing to use as a substitute. He really has to rely upon imports or shut it down. And shutting it down raises the price so that it encourages more selling. But if the beans aren't out there anyway, what good does it do to raise the price? And I think this is where I see a difference, economically speaking, between the corn and the soybean meal. And I think the other point goes back to, if we do see a big shift from corn-blended ethanol to sugar-blended ethanol, what does that do to the DDG market? That's where we're going to have to start digging into what are the ingredients, what are the protein levels and things like that, as far as can they be substitutes at the DDG level as well.
Okay, so if we did that, and I'm going to play... Well, I'm not going to play devil's advocate, because I don't think it would be sugarcane sugar that would be replacing, right? It would have to be beet sugar from the northern regions, because the ethanol plants aren't that far south. Sugarcane, it would be New Orleans and further south into Florida, but the beet producers would be up north.
I think that's a great point.
All right. So it's possible, I guess.
I think it's possible.
I'm trying to think out loud, Mike. I'm going with you.
I think this is where the market, you know, when they see Washington investigating the big banks, the Federal Reserve investigating the big banks and them holding physical commodities, and then you get stories like this, I think then these kind of price breaks. And what you just said about the market anticipating in the futures market, that's its job. That's exactly right. And so that's where I'm trying to clear up at the end of the week with clients and subscribers. This isn't all just about farmer-related selling and a turn in good weather. I think there's some other things out there.
And so you really think that there's more than just a, and I'll just frame it as a wall of corn that'll be coming into the marketplace that's at foot here then?
I do, because the weekly stocks report, Todd, that was just issued this Tuesday showed we had about 18.5 million bushels of corn at the big elevators and the terminals around the United States. That's 63% of what we had last year at this time. And for soybeans, we had 3 million bushels of soybeans in the terminals and elevators on the Tuesday report by USDA. That's 24% of what we had last year at this time. I don't think there's a lot of corn out there to be had.
Okay, let's talk about soybeans just a bit. On the weekly charts, for the week, soybeans, the lead option August contract, down $1.41. It's a huge break.
It is, and I think this is where the August and the September contracts are joining forces. I think this is where you're going to have this issue where the August and September contracts come together, and they're on the way to do that right now. And like we talked about this morning, the meal delivery on the first notice day on July 31st, I think it's going to be extremely important, because you're not encouraging imports at this stage by taking prices down so sharply, and by cutting the supply side, how are you going to meet the demand side in 30 to 45 days? I think crush margins will be so good at that point, then you'll really see demand come back. So this is where, what do we do with the minimal deliverable stocks we probably will have? And I think that's where August meal will continue to be the leader for the foreseeable future.
Okay, Mike, so... it's all about price discovery, and from your side, you're watching both the charts, you're watching the fundamentals, trying to figure out what's happening. Have you changed your mind about where you should be positioned at this point and what the marketplace might look like in the next 6 months?
No, not at all. In fact, okay. I think we are due to test the 490 level in December corn again and confirm that as resistance. If I see that tested and we break through the 490 and we get back above it, then I'll be back on track. If we hit the 490 level, can't get above it, Todd, I think that's where I would do more paper positions. But I'm pretty secure in the mindset at this stage. Bins will pay at this point between the basis and between the cash markets and between the wet corn that we're going to have to store and dry down anyway. Use the bins at this stage.
Okay. Are you telling end users that they ought to buy?
Yes. In fact, 6 months' worth of feed was bought when we hit 520 September corn, what was it, a month ago. I went ahead and put a recommendation out on last night's copy. Go to 12 months worth, cover it in the September, December, March, May, and July contracts. Don't go any farther out than July, but buy 12 months worth at this stage.
You know you're counter to a lot of folks, right?
I'm sorry?
You know you're counter to a lot of folks.
Yes, I do, but I think this is where the market really is. When you have the trade in the government data, be as rough as it's been on us for the last couple, 3 years. I think you just keep your eye on the cash market, and the demand side of the equation is improving. I mean, South Korea had its best growth in 2 years. Japan had its highest inflation since 2008, and we're seeing our housing market really take off. And so I think economic demand is starting to come around, and that rotation out of stocks and back into commodities, I still am a believer in.
Okay. You and Zwicker were both believers in that, although I'm not sure that Zwicker's staying with you, Mike.
I've lost the other Z-man.
maybe. We'll see. We'll see. I like it when there's disagreement among the analysts because it makes it more fun. To talk about it on the air. I know it's tougher on some of the analysts sometimes.
And it's tough on the producers, too.
It is.
That's where, and I don't think, you know, from my standpoint, being medium term, I don't think it's healthy to jump in and out of going one way or the other. So you got to believe in what you're saying as long as you think you're still on the right path.
Well, thank you so much for believing. Thanks for being with us. Have fun in Atchison. That's Mike Zuzulow. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting, and he is in Atchison, Kansas. Joins us here on the Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Well, don't forget, you can always listen to Mike again if you'd like on our website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. You'll also find Commodity Week there. Our panelists this week will be a great set, and we'll have Jerry Gahlke on from the Gahlke Group. We'll post that about 4:30 this evening, or rather we'll record about 4:30 this evening. I'll have it up on the website by at least 6 o'clock, maybe before. It's at willag.org. Up next, we reach into the archives of In My Backyard and hear Lisa Brault take the children of her neighborhood on a very local field trip.
We traveled a lot when I was little, so we never had a garden until I was a teenager. But both my parents grew up with gardens or on farms. We would stop by my mom's parents' place in western New York on one of our many trips through. The gardens and the farms, the tall corn, the tomatoes and cucumbers running a rather well-kept riot, the weird bugs, all made a huge impression on me. So when the outreach and education folks from Common Ground Food Co-op in Urbana asked me if I would be interested in hosting them, plus some smaller folks and their parents in my backyard for, well, learning about backyards, I was more than happy to. We started this Southeast Urbana version of a field trip in my yard. First, we checked out the rain barrel and talked a bit about our drought. Then we headed into the vegetable patch, where we investigated arugula and several types of lettuce gone to seed, checked out my compost squash experiment, and had a closer look at some extra-long green beans I was growing.
So a friend of mine gave me these seeds, and she said these beans will grow to be 3 feet long, and I'm going to let some of them grow to be that long for sure.
Oh, you can see the seeds growing in that pod right there really well.
Mm-hmm. Do you see it? Yep.
Yeah.
They're right in there.
See? They're bulging.
They really are.
Then it was off to a neighboring yard, but we had to go through another neighbor's yard to get there. They were cool with it.
It's okay. All these dogs are super cool. That's Alaska.
Our main mission with this second yard was to visit the chickens that live there. The chickens in this yard range freely. They're kept in the yard, but they're only penned up in their coop at night. They advanced on us a little as we let ourselves into the yard, hoping we had something tasty for them to eat. After reassuring one of my young guests that the chickens couldn't kill us, we went to have a look inside their very spacious coop.
What's that thing for? What's that thing?
Light.
It's a light.
What do you think that light does? It, besides give light, it does something else.
I see it lifts it up.
It keeps it warm, exactly. And in the winter time, it's really important that this light stays open. That's how they get down. Yep, the door is closed at night so that predators can't get in, like raccoons and possums.
Before we left house number two, we had a closer look at the espaliered fruit trees, trees whose branches are grown against the garage to save space. Then it was off to house number three. but we found something interesting along the way.
Do you know what's on top of that pole right
there?
No, that's a good guess. It's not a bird feeder. Something else that flies at night.
Yep, it was a bat house in my neighbor's front yard, part of a continuing art project in Urbana. House number 3 has a small backyard, and the chickens live among the tiny garden beds. We talked about vertical gardening, growing things up instead of out. A perfect example of this is the hop vine, whose cones are used to flavor beer. The wrong kind of beer, as it turns out.
Are the roots made in root beer?
No, the roots aren't made in root beer, but an interesting thing about their roots, when you buy hops or get hops, you plant them in the ground, they're called a rhizome, and they spread really fast, and they grow really tall. That's what she's got them growing up this fence. Sometimes they can grow more than a foot in a day.
Wow. So like, what the heck?
We wound up the field trip snacking on cherry tomatoes and sliced dragon's egg cucumbers, but the participants had to work for their souvenirs.
Oh, big seed head. You can grab whatever one you want and go ahead and put them in your envelope. You can take as many as you like.
You want to eat the bug?
No.
Yep, and then you just sort of...
We didn't see many weird bugs like in my grandfather's gardens, and we had no tall corn like my great-grandpa, but I'm hoping that each of the kids who visited our neighborhood that day had something make an impression on them. Clotheslines, the espaliered fruit trees, the chickens, who knows? All I know is this, get them interested while they're young. For In My Backyard, this is Lisa Braltz.
Our thanks go to Lisa Braltz for her In My Backyard segments.
Support comes from the Black Dog Smoke and Ale House, serving barbecue, beef brisket, pork shoulder, ribs, chicken, and more.
Slow Jim Dewey at WTAD, WKAN, Quincy, and Kankakee, a farm broadcaster, National Association of Farm Broadcasting member. He says the United Soybean Board has joined together with 15 land-grant universities and 6 major ag technology companies to develop the Take Action program. He interviewed Illinois soybean grower and U.S. board member Doug Winter. He tells us the Winter says the program grew out of surveys from farmers who said they did not believe herbicide-resistant weeds had much of an effect on their profitability at this time.
But as we began to talk to the 69 directors on the USD board, we were finding these problems were becoming more prevalent in their areas. And it's something, what we try to do on the USD board is take a look down the road 3 to 5 years and see what we think may be the emerging problems. Because as you know, you can't get these results or new herbicides or anything up on the market very quickly going through FDA approvals. So we thought maybe we better pay some attention to this and at least find some, you know, do an informational campaign on some of the alternatives that we've got right now.
So Winter says the Tank Action Program is giving farmers an opportunity to learn more about resistant weeds and how to combat them.
On the Plant Management Network, we have some videos available that farmers can view, and it kind of gives them some ideas on different things they can do as far as changing crop rotations up a bit, using herbicides that have a different mode of action rather than just using the herbicide with one mode of action, and then also using residual herbicides in certain cases to help control these.
Growers can find more information at www.unitedsoybean.org or on the Plant Management Network website. That's plantmanagementnetwork.org, or simply by visiting the University of Illinois Bulletin website. You can learn a great deal from Extension Weed Scientist Aaron Hager there. Just search Google for Bulletin, Illinois.edu. I'll return in just a couple of minutes when we'll talk about the weather forecast with Jim Angel, Illinois State Climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey, Prairie Research Institute. This
support for
market report.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
It's National Chocolate Pudding Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1797, Charles Newbold patented the first cast iron plow. the share, landslide, and moldboard were cast in one piece and then wooden handles and beam added. Farmers rejected the invention, however, fearing the iron might poison the soil. In 1827, Samuel Crompton died. He was the inventor of the spinning mule to manufacture continuous, strong, fine yarn. In 1834, Sir Gilbert Blane died, a Scottish physician. He required that Scottish sailors include lemon juice in their diets, virtually eliminating scurvy due to sickness. In 1848, the first pure food laws were enacted in the U.S. And in 1910, Roy J. Plunkett was born. He was the inventor of Teflon in 1938. The discovery was accidental. Originally, the polymer was used as a corrosion-resistant coating to protect metal equipment used in production of radioactive material during World War II. By the way, the first non-stick cookware using Teflon was sold in 1960. And that's this day in agricultural history.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
This is the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason on the phone line with us. This afternoon to take a look at the weather forecast is Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute. Jim, thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Thank you.
Well, this morning on the program, because you send me by email your voice so I can send it out to radio stations with a weekend forecast, I pulled a little soundbite about Quincy, Illinois. Probably not everybody was listening at that time, but they've been really dry. Can you tell me about it?
That's right. The area around Quincy especially has been dry so far this month. Only a quarter of an inch was reported at the airport so far. So it was falling on the heels of a very wet spring, so it doesn't look like it did last year at this time. But it is kind of causing some issues, especially for fields that maybe were planted late, or those low spots in the fields where the roots just haven't developed quite as well yet. And so once that soil moisture starts to get used up, you can see some of the effects pretty quickly in those areas. So it's a concern in that area. In fact, the U.S. Drought Monitor has now put that part of Illinois in what they call abnormally dry. That doesn't mean drought, but just an area to be watched in coming weeks.
Is it a very confined area? I mean, if you go very far south, St. Louis, Belleville, from there, I think things get better. How about if you go north or to the west?
Yeah, it's pretty much confined to that part of the state when you go south. So from St. Louis southward, it's in pretty good shape. In fact, probably the hardest area is around Quincy, maybe just south of the Quad Cities area. But then if you kind of go to the east a little bit, kind of follow up the Illinois River, there's some areas around Peoria that are also dry and some areas around Kankakee. So there is kind of a band there that's does have some areas with dry conditions. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of the areas we're watching at this point.
And that's much broader than I had suspected. Any rainfall in the offing for them in the next 24 hours to a week or so?
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of the rain right now is way to the south of us at this point. There's a chance tonight and a 40% chance tomorrow, this afternoon and tonight. But really the next chance isn't until Monday and Tuesday. And the amounts from those events really didn't look all that impressive. So it's one of those things that if they get lucky, maybe they'll get a thunderstorm and give them a little bit of relief, but there's nothing to really erase the shortfall that some of those areas have right now.
Yeah, lucky would be an inch at sometimes when you're dry. That'll make a crop as opposed to not make a crop. So what's the outlook as you get a little further out? Any possibilities?
No, you go out to the 6 to 10-day and 8 to 14-day forecast, and they're actually fairly neutral for us. They've got us in for most of Illinois is near normal on the temperatures and precipitation, both for the 6 to 10-day and 8 to 14-day forecast. So That doesn't necessarily mean we're not getting any rain. It just means it's going to be close to average for this time of year on both temperature and precipitation.
Hey, thanks so much, Jim.
You're welcome.
Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey joins us here in the closing market report. Don't forget to tune in for Commodity Week up at willag.org by 6 o'clock this evening. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support comes from the Black Dog Smoke and Ale House, serving barbecue beef brisket, pork shoulder, ribs, chicken, and more, slow-cooked over a wood-fired smoker. The Black Dog, 201 North Broadway in downtown Urbana. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. And from Common Ground Food Co-op, now at Lincoln Square Mall, featuring organic and local foods grown right here in Illinois. Learn more on their website at www.commonground.coop.